With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast, and today I'm going to talk about Hitler's relationship and the Nazi Party's relationship with the German civil service. Obviously, in previous episodes, where we've been talking about the inner workings of the Nazi state, we've looked at the chaos that Hitler brought to the running of government. The dilemma that the Nazis faced was that they wanted to be able to control the levers of state to Nazify a supposedly impartial but highly conservative with a small c government system, but doing that so without excessively damaging it and causing disruption. Now, we know that they do cause disruption by allowing unqualified, unvetted and amateur Nazi Party figures into the workings of state. I often cite the Ribbentrop example, and you can catch that in various previous podcasts I've done on this. But the relationship between the Nazis and the civil service was a complicated and subtle one. The party found itself coming up against the German civil service in 1933, which was almost a wholly alien system of power and knowledge to the party. The party worked on a spirit of the Führer principle, of dynamism, of radical action, and was held together by extremely broad and populist notions of what was possible. The civil service doesn't operate like that at all. The National Civil Service, as it was referred to, was an organisation with relatively small numbers. The state civil services, such as the Länder civil services, such as those in Prussia and Bavaria, were much, much bigger. The civil servants, senior civil servants, had been in post for long periods of time, several decades, and there were long-standing traditions, unspoken conventions of competence and attention to detail and precision that guided these structures of government, very much like a British civil service is portrayed as being, where permanence and inflexibility supposedly trump the transitory and impulsive nature of politicians and their own political agendas. However, despite the fact that civil servants seemed to crave continuity and gradualism, there were a great many that were sympathetic towards the Nazis. Between 1930 and 1933, the party had made all sorts of overtures to the civil service, and these efforts had been, you know, quite positively received amongst a group who were very demoralised through the austerity years of the Brüning government. Heinrich Brüning had introduced civil service pay cuts, and overall the pride and the esteem of the German civil service was greatly diminished by 1933. Civil servants who had been in post for several decades, remember the Kaiserreich, were loyal to the Kaiser, or had been loyal to the Kaiser, resented the establishment of the Weimar Republic, and saw party politics as an irrelevance and a distraction from the workings of state. They believed that they were the guardians of the best interests of the state and represented what it was to be German and represented the best interests of the German people. And within these kind of ideas, within this worldview, are ideas that were potentially sympathetic towards Nazism. This idea of there being a way of serving Germany that transcended, that rose above the internecine disputes of party politics, that put the idea of nation and people first. Well, this was one of Hitler's key themes when he talked about sweeping away the parties, throwing the parties out of Germany. This chimed with certain civil servants who'd always seen themselves as being loyal to Germany and to the German people beyond the bickering and squabbling of the parties. Selfish sectional interests that managed to feud amongst each other were profoundly anti-patriotic, and yet the civil service had to bear them silently. Parliamentary democracy in 1918 removed from the civil service some of the power they had exercised. And after 1918, the civil service became gradually more politicised as party membership became a key factor in chances for advancement and promotion. So long before Hitler, the civil service were becoming accustomed to partisanship within a previously supposedly impartial administration. The civil service, I'd argue, had never been impartial. Certainly there were less party politics before 1914 than there were after 1918. But there were certain key institutional and ideological biases towards a brand of Prussian Junker conservatism, the kind of Bismarck worldview, if you will. An authoritarian figure like Hitler, they hoped, would liberate the civil service from partisanship. There would be no parties to pick or choose between. Many had views that a dictator might possibly be a beneficial thing for Germany in this regard. One thing that's always important to bear in mind is when we look at the various interest groups within Nazi Germany, such as the civil service, the legal profession and the medical profession, that did rather well out of Nazism and were delighted when Hitler came to power, is none of these groups likely would have envisaged the end years of Nazism. None of them had any inkling about genocide, or it's highly doubtful they did anyway. So when they were envisaging envisaging Nazism, as people do when they have authoritarian thoughts, they were looking at all sorts of positives that they thought a dictatorship could bring to Germany. As many people did in 1933, senior civil servants assumed that conservative figures within Hitler's cabinet would control Hitler and the two other Nazis who were appointed in January 1933, and something rather like the Kaiserreich would be restored. Instead, an extremely radical new form of government that the civil service had not encountered before was able to gain a foothold in January and have fully consolidated its power by the following August. When the nature of Nazism began to unfold and people in the civil service began to realise that they weren't getting a reheated version of Wilhelmine Germany, there were civil servants who went through all manner of justifying thoughts and who went through all manner of kind of moral acrobatics in order to give their decisions and their support for the regime some kind of legitimacy. Civil servants decided, there were some civil servants who decided that it was best to stay in their positions, irrespective of how distasteful some of the laws being passed they thought were, imagining that they would have a moderating effect on the party, that a civil servant working for the Nazi government would be able to gradually slow down the advancement of policy, and that things would be even worse if they left, because all that would happen is that if a senior civil servant left their post, they would be replaced not by an equivalent, but by a Nazi Party member. Noakes and Pridham write, "This dilemma is starkly revealed in the attitude of two leading diplomats to the Nazi takeover. Bernhard von Bülow, state secretary in the German Foreign Ministry until his death in 1936, and a highly civilized diplomat, chose to stay in office in the hope of keeping German diplomacy out of the hands of the Nazis and preventing extreme policies which might jeopardize German security. Yet he merely made the Nazis' task of persuading other countries to come to terms with the new regime that much easier by giving it an aura of respectability and the appearance of continuity. Shortly before his death, he justified his attitude. One can't leave one's country in the lurch because it has a bad government. The German ambassador to the United States, Friedrich von Prittwitz, on the other hand, resigned his post as early as the 6th of March 1933. He explained to a friend, "One must only put oneself at the disposal of a government for which certain basic values of humanity and justice are sacred. Coming to terms with inhuman principles in order to avoid something allegedly worse that leads to disaster." So it was a difficulty for all civil servants who were faced with this moral dilemma. Some obviously weren't and embraced the regime wholeheartedly, but deciding whether to leave or whether to go and which of these decisions would be honourable and which of these decisions would actually lead to even worse circumstances was something that was incredibly complex. The civil service, being largely middle class, was suffused by this bourgeois German notion of civic patriotism, of being able to contribute towards the functioning of the country, and that this being not just a career, but a public good. German civil servants very often came from a law background or a background in the study of law, and therefore they saw themselves as having a legal obligation to pass the legislation that was handed down to them. The idea that government legislation from the Reich Chancellery could be compared to previous statute and evaluated as to its legality, as often you get in the British civil service. Civil servants are frequently telling ministers what they can and cannot do based on their understanding of the law.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is entirely different. The law was what the the Reich Chancellery said it was, and the German civil servant had a duty to follow it. The state, as embodied by the Führer, was, after all, an expression of the German people's will, and this meant that the community in which all individuals in Germany were part of would be granted rights which were in line with the workings of the state itself. It goes without saying that this attitude greatly helped the Nazis. Having a civil service that believed that because a law was passed by the state, it was legitimate because of the state itself, meant that there was very little challenge and attempt to revise laws when they were handed down from the Reich Chancellery. There was therefore a great deal of conformity in the German bureaucracy, and it made laws that ordinarily would have appeared monstrous, and indeed were monstrous, such as the T4 action proposed by Philipp Bühler, just a simple bureaucratic process to enact. Obviously, we have to take into account the mitigating factors here in the fact that by the time of the T4 action, a one-party state with its own system of repression and its own apparatus of state control existed, and civil servants not only were simply going through the mechanistic processes of passing law, many of them approved of these laws, but also they were trapped within a surveillance police state dictatorship. The Nazis, oddly enough, found the legalistic processes of the German civil service something that made them feel suspicious. Hitler was particularly suspicious of a system that worked on rational and formulaic procedures where there were legal norms. Hitler didn't want to be constrained by legal norms, even those that helped him. Hitler believed that he operated outside the bureaucratic world of process in a separate sphere of kind of racial morality, and that he was beholden not to any set of processes or laws, but really to nature and history. This is the level that Hitler believed he operated on, and he thought that he was simply the kind of mouthpiece of the German people. He was there to transmit their ideas, values, beliefs, fears, and he was the embodiment of the German people's will. Of course, these are all fantasy notions, but it shows you why Hitler looked with fear at the workings of the civil service, much in the same way that he was suspicious of experts and people with, well, sort of accumulations of knowledge. The procedural civil service that looked with derision upon incompetence, which was rife within the Nazi Party, that disavowed corruption, which was also rife within the party, was a strange and uncomfortable bedfellow for the Nazi regime. The first blow to the civil service came in March and April 1933, during the period described as the revolution from below, where Nazification began to occur in state institutions. The men with years of skill, perhaps in some cases decades of skill, experience and knowledge, were fired from their posts and replaced by Nazis. As these purges happened throughout the states and happened to the Länder government, often it was local parties with little direction from Hitler and the senior leadership of the Nazi Party. The Nazis at the high level, at the top level, were keen to hang on to as many knowledgeable and skilled civil servants as possible, but the radicalism of the grassroots meant that in many cases these decisions were taken and the Nazi leadership was largely unaware of it. And the fact that this kind of chaotic process could take place in January 1933 tells us once again an awful lot about the Nazi regime, that it was based on initiative, it was based on dynamism, it was based on constant, ceaseless action. Whether that action was remotely advisable or not, that in some ways about Nazism ceases to be the point. Hitler gave his blessing in some ways to Nazis who wanted to make changes off their own bat, and essentially said, real leaders lead, they don't ask. So if you're the leader of a local party somewhere in Germany and you want to do something, take action, because that's what leadership in the Nazi movement is all about. The politicisation of the civil service happened in a different way as well. Noakes and Pridham again write. At the same time, during 1933, a large number of SA commissars moved into government offices at various levels, with the excuse that they were making sure that the civil servants were acting in accordance with the principles of the new regime. In the first few months, the government did little to prevent this upheaval, partly because it favoured the purging of its political opponents from their offices, but partly because it sometimes found it difficult to control the SA and the local party organisations. The government was often confronted with local fait accompli. The various party organisations all tended to go their own way. Yet this arbitrary behaviour by the local party organisations and the continual interference by various commissars threatened to alienate the civil service and undermine the administrative effectiveness essential for the stabilising of the new order. So this desire to purge the civil service of political undesirables and the desire for stability were once again at loggerheads with one another, and Hitler, being the type of leader who liked to remove himself from debates, to be distant and aloof from them, and to hope that they would sort themselves out and go away, was unable to intervene and resolve these conflicting imperatives and come up with a compromise position or make a decision one way or another. On the 7th of April 1933, the law for the restoration of the professional civil service was instituted. The law was an attempt by the government to exploit long-standing grievances on the political right during the Weimar years, that the left had infiltrated the bureaucracy with unqualified politicised figures who were there simply to ride the gravy train and to pass through illegitimate socialist laws. Contained within the law of April 1933 was obviously the clause to purge Jews from the civil service. The numbers of civil servants purged were in fact relatively small, though there were more lost in Prussia. 12.5% of the 1,663 administrative grade civil servants in Prussia were affected by the law, and 15.5% were affected by clauses 5 and 6, which allowed for the transfer out of a department of an undesirable civil servant or the forced early retirement. There was a surprising degree of complacency as well about these changes. There is here minutes of a meeting on the 25th of April 1933 regarding the new purge law. And it says, there was no question of justice being in acute danger. It did not say much for the judges if they felt concerned about such a law. Civil servants who somewhere, sometime, had made some human error were not to be touched by the law. He, Goering, particularly wished to point out the dangers to which the law could lead under confined local circumstances where everybody more or less knew everybody else. A strong personality might be able to overcome any personal hostility he may have or possible feelings of revenge. Someone who's grumbled at us sometime, somewhere, may be a very capable civil servant, and need not be damned just like that, said Goering. The carrying out of law in the states was the responsibility of governments there. The question of how far the parties could be involved depended on the circumstances, but it was very important that only such people should take part in the preparations for the decisions who were absolutely decent characters and not themselves aspirants for the new vacancies. National Socialists were not immune from human weakness. A law was being passed for Prussia that every informer who could not absolutely prove the truth of his statements should be punished with the full force of the law. So here we have the rather implausible picture of Goering really arguing in favour of some sort of checks and balances in the civil service purge. I think the way to reconcile this with everything else we know about Goering is to acknowledge that here was somebody for whom consistency meant absolutely nothing. For expediency was his kind of go-to concept. And here is somebody who would say whatever it took in any given situation in order to make sure his own views and his own wants prevailed. Somebody who, during the first years of the concentration camps, at some points argued in favour of moderation, even in favour of actual possible amnesty. But when the Führer decided that that was not what was required, suddenly shifted in the other direction. He was a consummate politician and was able to hang any principles and suspend any moderate notions when it suited him. So I think we have to take what he's saying here with an enormous amount of scepticism. Now, in a later podcast, we'll look at what happens after the first couple of years of Hitler's coordination of the civil service, and look at when the relationship between the civil service and the regime begins to sour, and the growing resentment of the Nazis that develops amongst senior civil servants. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you found this useful and enjoyable, and I'll catch you on the next podcast. Do remember that if you are passing by iTunes and you want to give us a good review, that's greatly appreciated. And also, you can give us a comment on our Facebook page, the Explaining History Facebook page. It'd be great to see you there and join in the conversation. Take care. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.